हरे राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. So we're continuing our study of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the fifth canto, chapter 14, and today's verse is text number 10, and the chapter is entitled The Forest of Enjoyment. Kvachit sakrida bhagata vishayavatatya. Svayam parabhyanena vibhramsita smritis. Tayeva marichitaya. Payamstan eva bidavati. Kvachit sakrida bhagata vishayavatatya. Svayam paribhajanena vibhramsita smritis. Tayeva marichitaya. Payamstan eva bidadvati. Kvachit sakrida bhagata vishaya vaitatya. Svayam paribhayanena vibhramsita smritish. Taiva marichitaya. Payamstan eva vidavati. So this shloka is a little unconventional. So we don't have to actually repeat it if no one feels confident enough. So we'll just go for the word for words, looks like. Kvachit, sometimes. Sakrit, once. Avagata vishaya vaitatya. Becoming conscious of the uselessness of enjoying material sense gratification. Svayam, himself, para abhijanena, by the bodily concept of the self, vibhramsita, destroyed, smriti, whose remembrance, toya, by that, eva, certainly, marichitoya, water in a mirage, prayan, similar to, tan, those sense objects, eva, certainly, abhidhavati, runs after. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The conditioned soul sometimes personally appreciates the futility of sense enjoyment in the material world, and he sometimes considers material enjoyment to be full of miseries. However, due to his strong bodily conception, his memory is destroyed, and again, he runs after material enjoyment just as an animal runs after a mirage in the desert. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The main disease in material life is the bodily conception. being baffled again and again in material activity, the conditioned soul temporarily thinks of the futility of material enjoyment, but he again tries the same thing. By the association of devotees, a person may become convinced of the material futility, but he cannot give up his engagement, although he is very eager to return home back to Godhead. Under these circumstances, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in everyone's heart, compassionately takes away all the material possessions of such a devotee. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.88.8, Yasyaham anugrinami harishyetad vanam shanai. Lord Krishna says that he takes everything away from the devotee whom he especially favors when that devotee is overly attached to material possessions. When everything is taken away, the devotee feels helpless and frustrated in society, friendship, and love. He feels that his family does not care for him any longer, and he therefore completely surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. This is a special favor granted by the Lord to a devotee who cannot fully surrender to the Lord due to a strong bodily conception. As explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 22.39, Ami vigya emurke vishaya kene divo. The Lord understands the devotee who hesitates to engage in the Lord's service, not knowing whether he should again try to revive his material life. After repeated attempts and failures, he fully surrenders to the lotus feet of the Lord. The Lord then gives him directions, and attaining happiness, he forgets all material engagement. So this verse and this purport is very, very applicable to all of us today in this world in the 21st century, because this is our situation, that we sometimes appreciate the futility of sense enjoyment. We talk about it, we say, that's Maya Prabhu. But sometimes we ourselves, who tell other people that it's Maya, we also enjoy some material sense enjoyment. So this is our situation. We have some information, and maybe we even have some realization, having been kicked a number of times, about the futility of material sense gratification. But we don't have deep knowledge or wisdom to act in that way 100% of the time. And the reason is because we're addicted to material sense enjoyment. So the question is, why are we addicted to material sense enjoyment? And the answer is always because we're not experiencing the taste, the nectar of spiritual sense enjoyment. Because having once experienced that, you give up the lower taste. Param drishva nivartate. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, having tasted the higher taste, you're no longer attracted to the lower taste. Prabhupada gives the example, if you're attached to brass, someone gives you gold, your attachment for brass immediately evaporates. So our situation is that we have yet to swim in that ocean of nectar of Krishna consciousness, of Krishna seva, of bhakti yoga. So therefore, we're still trying to find some taste in material life. But Krishna is so kind, he comes as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to teach us how to find some taste in material life by applying it to the service of Krishna. So the senses, they always require sense objects. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching us how to give spiritual sense objects to the senses. So the tongue has to taste various things, so we only taste that which is offered to Krishna, prasadam. We don't taste that which is bhog, that which is not offered to Krishna. So we're still enjoying, but it's connected to Krishna. Or the tongue has to speak something, so instead of speaking about the latest Bollywood movie, or the latest book, or the latest hit song on the hit parade, we speak about Harikatha, we speak about the kirtan, we speak about the leela of Krishna, the guna, the qualities of Krishna. We speak about the various names of Krishna, and we speak about the teachings of Krishna, the associates of Krishna. So in this way, the sense objects become spiritualized, and we use the senses in Krishna's service. So Prabhupada says that, well, and the verse, we'll just continue looking at the verse, even though that we know that the material enjoyment is full of miseries, due to our strong bodily conception, our memory is destroyed. The word is destroyed here in the verse. Vibhramshita, destroyed. It becomes illusory. Even though it's an illusory, our memory becomes like an illusion. We forget, we don't remember. And again, we return back to material sense enjoyment. Just as an animal, the example is given, an animal runs after a mirage in the desert. And we've all seen, when you're driving along the highway on a sunny day, and you see on the road about 1 or 2 kilometers ahead, there's water on the road. And when you get there, no water. Anybody seen that? We've all had that experience. So that's the illusion here, running after a water mirage. So the main disease in material life is the bodily conception of life, considering myself to be the body, to consider myself as either American or Indian, as either Hindu, Christian, or Jew, like this. And this is very deeply ingrained, because right from birth, our parents and our relatives convince us you're a man or you're a woman, you're a Hindu or you're a Christian, you're an Indian or an American. So we get this conditioning, this brainwashing right from the very beginning, unless we take birth in a devotee family where the mother teaches, you're not this body, you're a spirit soul. And therefore, according to the Vedas, the Vaishnavi mother is the first guru, because she's teaching her child the tattva, the truth, that he's the spirit soul, the eternal servant of Krishna. And the main disease, Prabhupada says, is the bodily conception. Krishna describes this as aham mameti, I and mine. Prabhupada gives this very nice example. We come into the world with nothing, zero, and we leave the world with nothing. But in between, we're claiming proprietorship over this and this and that. So this is our material disease based on our body. So being baffled again and again in material endeavors, we come to the realization that it's futile to enjoy material life, and therefore we look for an alternative. And we've all probably had that experience. Sometime in our life, we just said, is this it? This is all there is to life? Please, God, if you're there, please guide me to something higher. There's got to be more to life than this. I don't want to be like everybody else. And then By some causeless mercy, Krishna arranges that we come in association with a devotee. Brahmanda bhamite kono bhagavana jeev guru krishna prasade pai bhakti lata bij. That the living entity has been wandering throughout the universes in so many different bodies, so many species, different species of life. And then by the causeless mercy, he becomes fortunate. Krishna arranges he meets a devotee. So by the mercy of Krishna, we eventually find our guru. And by the mercy of the guru, we eventually come to Krishna. Because the bhakti lata bij is planted in our seed. Seed is planted in our heart. So when a seed becomes planted in our heart, what does that mean? It means we have to become a gardener. Lord Chaitanya said, Ami Mali. I am a gardener. And I have to cultivate the seed in my heart, this bhakti lata, the seed of devotion. I have to cultivate it, I have to water it, I have to pull out the weeds, and I have to allow it to grow. And it will grow more and more. And this is what we call advancement in bhakti yoga. So the watering process we all know, shravanam kirtanam, hearing and chanting. Through the hearing, we actually can chant the holy names. And when we hear properly and chant the holy names properly, then we come to smaranam. We can remember. What do we remember? We remember the holy names of the Lord in all situations. What else do we remember? We remember His qualities. We remember His different forms. We remember His different pastimes. We remember His different associates. We remember His teachings, moment to moment to moment to moment. Shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam. This is the process. Then the other things come without any separate endeavor. Padasevanam, serving the lotus feet. Dasyam, becoming a personal servant of the Lord. Sakyam, becoming a friend. Vandanam, offering prayers. Shakyam, becoming an intimate friend of the Lord. Atmanivedanam, surrendering everything. But the crux is shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam. Out of these three, the foundation is shravanam. This is the most important thing. Why is this more important than kirtanam? And I will explain to you. Because if the shravanam is good, then the kirtanam will also be good. But what if the shravanam is bad? What if I'm inattentive while chanting? If my shravanam is bad, can the kirtanam be good? What do you think? No, it can't be, for many reasons. Number one, it's an offense to be inattentive while chanting. So nobody does good chanting while committing offenses at the same time. That's logical and obvious. But another reason is, when we're inattentive, it means we're not hearing the holy name. When you don't hear the holy name, Chaito Darpana Marjanam does not take place. Because for the heart to be purified and cleansed, the holy name first has to enter into the ear, into the consciousness, and then into the heart. But inattentive means I'm not hearing. So let's have some proof. What's the proof that we're not hearing? Well, we all chant japa, right? How many people have had this experience? We're chanting japa, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. And all of a sudden I come to the Krishna bead. The round's finished. But I can't remember how I got to the end. Anybody ever have that experience? Why can't you remember? You can't remember because of the meaning of the word remember. Smaranam. It means that something went in the first place and you can bring it back out again. You can't remember something that you never heard in the first place. Clear? So, if we're not hearing the Holy Name, then our heart's not becoming purified. Mahadavagni nirvapanam. And the blazing forest fire of material existence is not extinguished. Because this is a scientific process. Prabhupada explained, it's scientific. It works if you do it right. Does it work if you do it wrong? Why should it? It wouldn't be fair if you do something wrong to get the same result as someone who did it right. That wouldn't be fair. And Krishna is very fair. Someone does it right, they get the result. Someone does it wrong, well, sorry, maybe next life. So what is it that we do wrong? There's two major things that we do wrong. The first is the 10th offense, which is to be inattentive while chanting. This is the key. Because if the hearing is good, the kirtanam will be good. And then the smaranam will be there because we'll be able to remember from a purified heart. But if the shravanam is bad, then the kirtanam's also bad. I don't hear anything and I can't remember anything. My heart doesn't become purified and I remain still attached to material things and I remain still attached to the bodily concept of life and I think I'm Italian or American or Indian or Hindu or Christian or Jewish or black or white or male or female or Russian or Polish or whatever. But we're not these things. So we have the information. But when will that information finally become knowledge? When we perform the process correctly. When we hear properly. So that means with chanting with care and attention. This is the phrase that Prabhupada used. Care and attention. Care means two things to me. It means carefully. We chant carefully. And we chant with care, with feeling. And attention. Attention means two things. It means concentrating. And it means focusing on hearing and not on anything else. So when we chant with care and attention, then we're performing the process correctly and it's not offensive chanting. This is the clearing stage of chanting. We're clearing away those impurities. But if we're not allowing the sound vibration to enter into the ear, like for example, we don't remember how we got to that end of the round, then we didn't get the benefit of that round. So now I'm faced with a dilemma. I came to the end of the round. I can't remember how I got there. I have a choice. I can count it as a round chanted, or I can chant it over again with more concentration and more care. How many people count it as a round chanted? How many people chant it over again? Okay, so half and half. Although most people didn't raise their hands, so they were non-committal. But this is called the science of self-realization. It's self-realization. We have to do it. And it's a science. If you do it right, you get the result. You do it wrong, you don't get the result. So that's the first big mistake or error that's holding us back from tasting the nectar of Krishna consciousness and giving up bodily concept of life. The second one is the first offense. slandering devotees, saying negative things about devotees. And who are the devotees? They're the ones who've dedicated their lives to chanting the holy name, to serving Lord Chaitanya, to serving Prabhupada, to serving the deity. When we slander them by saying negative things, or if we say a correct thing but with a negative mentality, like, none of us are perfect, so I may do my service but not so good, but I'm trying my best, but someone say, yeah, you did a terrible service. Well, maybe he's right. Yeah, I did do a terrible service. I could have done better. I'll do it over again. But the mentality, the attitude was completely offensive. And this is explained very nicely in the ninth canto. Durvasa Muni, when he came to see Ambarish Maharaj, and Ambarish Maharaj was engaged in his puja, and didn't immediately welcome the guest, which according to Vedic custom, Atithi Seva, this is the first thing you do. You stop everything and welcome the guest, because according to the Vedic culture, the guest is to be honored like God, as if God came to your house. So Durvasa Muni commented that, you know, you didn't stop everything, you didn't welcome me as your guest. It was true, it wasn't a false thing, but it was slander because he said it with a negative mentality. And what happened? Lord Vishnu sent his Sudarshan Chakra to chastise Durvasa Muni. Now Durvasa Muni is a great mystic yogi, so as he was able to escape from Sudarshan Chakra, we can't escape Sudarshan Chakra. But Durvasa Muni was able to, but Sudarshan followed him everywhere until finally the only recourse that Durvasa Muni had was to go to Vishnu, follow his lotus feet and say, save me, protect me. And Vishnu said, I'm very sorry, my hands are tied, I can do nothing. What? You're Vishnu. What do you mean? You offended a Vaishnava. He's the only one who can save you. When you go back and beg forgiveness, then you're reestablished, you're connected again to me, and you get my mercy again. This is such an important history in the ninth canto, that when we offend Vaishnavas, we're cut from the mercy of the holy name. As I was explaining the other day, even the murderers and the child molesters in jail, they're not cut from the mercy of the Lord. But a Vaishnava who offends another Vaishnava is. Anyone in jail can always get the mercy of the Lord, but not an aparadhi, unless he goes back and begs forgiveness for that slander, for that offense, for that aparad, and of his negative mentality. And here's something else we learn from Shastra, that when I offend somebody, then for whatever reason, then whatever negative karma was going to come to that person now comes to me for finding his fault. So every time I find someone's fault and criticize them, then whatever negative karma that they were going to get now comes to me. And whatever good pious activities I had now goes to him. This is why the pure devotees say that if anybody offends me, you're my best friend. I also say that. If anyone offends me, criticizes me, I say, thank you very much, you're my best friend. Any more faults you can find? Because they're clearing my path back home, back to Godhead. Because on my own, I don't have a chance. Before I met Srila Prabhupada, I was fool number one. And I'm still fool number one, because that's who I am. But by the mercy of Prabhupada, he gave me the process to stop being fool number one. And by the mercy of the fault finders and criticizing, they're clearing my path back home, back to Godhead. So therefore, in my life, I'm very, very careful never to offend anybody. Because I know what it means. It doesn't benefit me, only benefits the person that I offend. So, what I'm speaking about is performing the process correctly. And the only way that I know what is the correct way to perform the process of Bhakti Yoga is by studying Srila Prabhupada's books. If I don't study the books, then how will I know what is right and what is wrong? What to do or what not to do? I can speculate, but speculation, mental speculation, is gambling, and it's considered a regulative principle. There's four regulative principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, no gambling, and no mental speculation. But most devotees only follow three regulative principles, because they speculate on the mental platform regularly, every day, practically every hour. But the process is four. Why is gambling and mental speculation the fourth regulative principle? Because gambling means there's two outcomes, you win or you lose. Mental speculation, there's two outcomes, you're right or you're wrong. But following the Shastra, following the Parampara, there's only one outcome, you're right. So why should we take the risk that we may be wrong? Once I realized in my life that I was taking these unnecessary risks and spoiling my chance to go back to Godhead, then I realized I don't want to take these risks. I just want to stay on the path, tried and true. No deviation. And now I'm going to share with you what Prabhupada shared with me on February 9th, 1975, in Los Angeles. So he was speaking in a very humble way. Prabhupada became very grave. And he said, "My Guru Maharaj ordered me to spread the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the English-speaking countries. But I am an old man. What can an old man do?" I was thinking, wow, Srila Prabhupada's so humble. He's taking, what can an old man do? "But my Guru Maharaj," he continued, "was so kind upon me, he sent all of you American boys and girls to help me." So Prabhupada was saying that as an old man he couldn't do anything, but his Guru Maharaj sent his disciples to help him, so that he could do something. And then he said, "So now I'm very happy to say that Lord Chaitanya's mission is in the right hands." And he went like this. Then he said, "If I do have any credit, there's only one thing." Can you believe it? Prabhupada says, "If I have any credit, it's only one thing." And this is what he said. "That I have delivered the teachings of the Guru Parampara as it is, without adding anything and without subtracting anything, as it is. If I have any credit, this is my one thing." And then he gave an example. He gave an example of a postman, but he didn't use the word postman. He used the word peon instead. which is even lower than a postman. He said, just like a peon receives, he takes the letter from the government and he delivers it to the citizen without opening it, without adding anything, without subtracting anything. So Prabhupada was saying that he's taken the message from the supreme government, from Goloka Vrindavan, from Sri Krishna, and delivered it to us, the ordinary citizens in here on planet Earth, without adding anything, without changing anything as it is. Therefore, we should be following it as it is. And we should be doing our best to follow the process correctly. So Prabhupada says here, by the association of devotees, a person may become convinced of the material futility. And I think we're all convinced, right? That material life is futile. Am I right? We're all convinced of that. But he cannot give up his engagement, even though he's eager to return home back to Godhead. We're all eager to return home back to Godhead. But we're still having difficulty giving up this material life. So now I'm going to give you the secret. I hinted about it earlier, but here's the secret. It's an open secret, because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, whatever you give in charity, do it as an offering to me. So sometimes people ask me, well, what if I'm a grihasta? I have a job, I got a family, I got children, I got to clothe them, feed them, send it to school. How can I be doing devotional service 24 hours a day? How can I follow the process 100%? Well, it's just a matter of tweaking your consciousness. Right now, you're thinking that when I'm on the job, I'm Maya Chela. In Maya, I'm doing the work of Maya. But all I have to do is change my consciousness that the work I'm doing in the office or in the business is to support the Vaishnavas, to support the temple, to support the teachings of Krishna, to support the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So how does that relate? How am I doing those things by working in some factory or in some office? And here's the secret. Listen carefully for those of you who are in this situation. Every one of us takes a job for one reason and one reason only. And that is to get the money. Because if they tell you that we're no longer able to pay you, but we appreciate your service, please carry on without pay, no one will stay. Am I right? So we're only there for the money. So this money is counted in man hours. How many hours and how much money you get for each hour. So let's say, you know, you get $15 for an hour. So for that hour's service, if you spend $15 or take that $15 and donate it to Krishna, then you did 1 hour of devotional service. Does everybody understand this point? It's your work that you did that was given to Krishna. So if all of the money that you get for working is to support the Vaishnavas, because your family are Vaishnavas, your children are Vaishnavas, the bhoga that you buy, you offer to Krishna. The car you have, you drive to the temple, you drive your kids to school, you use it to perform devotional service. So if we tweak our consciousness that all the money that I'm getting for my labor, I'm using it for the Vaishnavas, for Krishna, for the mission, for spreading the teachings, for book distribution, then your work in the company, in the business, has now been transformed into devotional service. Does everybody understand? So that's why we say Krishna consciousness. And here's another thing Prabhupada told me that I remember so clearly, because he said something I'd never heard before. He said, don't be Krishna unconscious. I'd never heard that phrase, Krishna unconscious. He said, first become conscious. Conscious what you're doing. Conscious that you're dealing with Krishna. First become conscious, then you can become Krishna conscious. But don't be Krishna unconscious. Don't do things automatically. Don't do things by rote. Don't do things by automatic pilot. Don't do things just to get it over with. How many people chant their rounds and when they're finished their 16, they go, ah, finished 16. Now I can do something I like. But what kind of message are we sending to Krishna? That I'm so happy that I don't have to chant your names anymore? I'm glad it's over? It's such a yajna? This is not a way to establish a relationship with anyone. So I suggest that we end our japa a different way. You finish your 16 rounds, you say, my dear Lord, thank you so much for allowing me to chant your holy name. I've finished chanting 16 rounds. There's other pressing services that I have to do. Please don't mind if I stop now and do other services, and I'll come back to it as soon as possible. How many people think that's a better way to end the japa? Thank you very much. So let's not run after a mirage in the desert. Let's first become conscious. We know what the process is. Let's do it correctly. And at the end of this life, let's really go back home, back to Godhead, because we earned it, because we did everything correctly. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Yes, Mataji. So if anyone has questions, just approach the mic. It's easier for you to go to the mic than the mic to come to you. So the mic is near the camera.
So thank you for bringing that point to my attention about, I never heard that before about making offenses, but saying the correct thing with the wrong attitude. So I do that a lot, so thank you for bringing that to my attention. I was just wondering on one detail. So I'll just describe something that happened. There was one devotee, there was an event happening with many devotees. It was a retreat. And there was one devotee there that, when prasadam came, he stood up in front of all the devotees and he made some announcements, and then he said, okay, now we'll take prasadam. And he started, chanting the prayer. He went, Sarya Vijaja Jadendriya Taka. And then he went, oh, what's next? Anyway, never mind, let's just go and eat. And I was so disturbed. I was so incredibly disturbed. And I was in that point, when I mentioned that event to a friend, it was with a very wrong attitude. It was with a very disturbed and angry attitude. And so many of these kind of things happen. And so my question to you is, it's not a matter of not committing the offenses in, I'm not going to say something. It's a matter of not being disturbed by things we see and hear all the time.
So here's what happened in that situation. He was not focused. So his mind was a little inattentive, maybe due to somewhat disturbance of something. So he forgot the mantra, which everybody knows, blindfolded, backwards and forwards. So he was a little disturbed. But you got disturbed by his disturbance. Rather than thinking, oh, the poor guy, you were disturbed by his disturbance. And you took it in a negative way. Then what you did was gramya kata. You shared that with others and spread it to someone else. This makes it even worse. It's bad enough that you felt that in yourself, but you spread it to others, and you don't know if someone else spread it to someone else and how wide it spread after that.
So, no, this was in front of everyone. So the person that I talked to was there.
So in front of everyone, you spread this negative thing. So what I would do in your situation is to go back to that person and say, you know, this is what happened and I was disturbed and I said this negative thing. I realize now I shouldn't have done that. Please forgive me. And it's done. He may not forgive you. Doesn't matter. You've done your service. There was when I was living in this temple in 1975, one of the first services they give you is they put you in the kitchen. Of course, now we have hired people. We have Indians in the kitchen. But in those days, there was only us Westerners. So I was in the kitchen. And there was an English devotee, and we were doing our service. And we got into some philosophical discussion. And we had opposing viewpoint. And I was saying this, he was saying that. Finally, I realized that, oh my God, I'm here in Vrindavan and I'm having an argument in the Holy Dham. So I said, please forgive me, and I offered my obeisances. But he wouldn't accept my obeisances. He just stood there and says, no, you're wrong. And he walked out. Well, I'd never seen him ever again. That was what, 75? It was like 39 years ago. I haven't seen him in 39 years. So he should have offered obeisances also, then it would have been cleared. But he maintained a negative mentality, whereas I didn't. So the process is, as Vishnu said to Durvasa Muni, my hands are tied. I can't help you now. You have to go back to Ambarish Maharaj and beg for his forgiveness. Then the mercy is reestablished. Now, I'm not saying that you're cut from Vishnu's mercy. I'm just saying that this example, this history is in the Shastra, and it's there for us to learn, for us to follow that example. So if we follow that example, we're not taking any risk. If we don't follow the example, there may be a risk. And personally, I'm not willing to take any risks because I'm fried with the material world and I don't want to take birth again. So I've made it a strong sankalpa, a firm conviction, this is my last life. I'm not going to do anything to spoil it. So this is something I'm sharing with you. Maybe you want to also adopt this mentality in your life. Is that helpful?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, this person here. Here's the microphone right next to you.
Just a small comment or a different angle that It's not applicable directly to this lady, but why should she be in anxiety or disturbed from such a mistake? It invites her to reflect on her foundation of faith, and why if he's making a mistake, why should I be disturbed? Because something in me. Or something in him broke my foundation of faith. So if something broke the foundation of faith, where is my faith? How deep it is, or how I'm relate on external things and not my relation in Krishna.
Okay, so what you're saying is a different subject matter altogether.
Yes.
And all of us have weak faith. But that's not the point. She spoke with honesty and courage here to admit that I made a mistake. And the 9 most difficult words in the English language are, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, please forgive me. So anyone who can say that and is willing to learn, they have courage. So it's not that I'm thinking, well, what kind of faith has she got? I should be thinking, what kind of faith have I got? It's not for me to judge someone else's faith. But the science of self-realization means I have to judge my own faith. Okay?
I would like to invite her to check her.
Okay, so you and her have a personal discussion about it. Okay? And she can explain to you and you can explain to her. Any other points about the topic? Okay, it's time for prasadam. So now this is also a process of devotional service, bhakti yoga, so we want to do that properly also. So the proper way to take prasadam is to honor Mahaprasad, not to chit-chat while we take prasad, but to honor it and realize that it's non-different than Radha Shyam Sundar. It's been offered to Radhe Shyam, and it's non-different than Radhe Shyam. But if I'm just taking it because I'm hungry, or I like the taste, or to fill my body, my tummy, then that's not devotional service, that's sense enjoyment. So let's honor prasadam correctly also. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.